Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Hey, if you're a South Carolina fan, and there are a lot of them, and if there's ever a program that maybe fan passion least equates to on-field success historically, it might be South Carolina. Well, right now, you got something to go crazy about.
SI's Ross Dellinger and SI's Pat Forte.
Oh, let's commit pass interference. Oh, and then best of all, when a guy's run out of bounds, let's rip his helmet off and get another personal foul and let him march down there and get a doink touchdown and blow the cover. Boo, Bearcats.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod. And Pat, we have no Ross today. Ross is, quote, on assignment, end quote.
Means he could be incarcerated. I don't know.
Simon,
we're hoping for the best. No, we're hoping we have Ross back on Tuesday.
Simon is make the big rocks into little rocks out there in the prison chain gang. I don't know. Not, is Ross arrested? Can we get some BetMGM odds on that? I don't believe so. I think he's free. Or he smuggled a cell phone into the joint. Anyway, no Ross. So you just get Pat and I, and maybe Sean if we see, here's the thing, Sean, I've taken a bunch of, our company here at Yahoo, we care about our employees. And so we take a lot of workplace harassment videos, like how not to, don't harass the other workers, that stuff. I mean, everyone had to sit through it. They're usually pretty mind numbing, but I got to say, I don't know what to do. Can I make fun of Sean for going 0-6 in the race for the case this week? Is that harassment?
On the podcast,
is that part of the show? And yes. I don't know, so I'm not doing it. I'm just broaching the question.
We can throw that out there to the listenership.
Are you feeling harassed right now by me?
You know what? I should take a beating for going 0-6. Okay. It's just it's impossible to do.
Oh no!
It should be impossible
to
do,
but I've done it.
Oh yeah, you're not the only one on the podcast to have done that. Trust me.
Yeah,
I think we all have
0-6. Let me just say my lock of the week. I think I'm perfect on locks of the week the whole year. So I'm due to lose. So don't bet it next week. But Bowling Green just getting 6.5, just walks up to Mount Pleasant like it's Mount Pleasant and curb stomps them, causes 4 turnovers. There's money to be made in the MAC, Pat. Money to be made in the MAC.
No, you are our MAC correspondent. There you go. Well, I'll handle the Power 6 or Power 5 conferences, Ross and I. You go ahead and deal with the MAC.
I made sure I didn't go back to Toledo, and they ended up they were leading big, but they blew the big lead to Buffalo. All right, that's enough MAC talk. Here, let me tell you what we don't have, Pat. Let me tell you, undoubtedly, we do not have this, a quarterback controversy in Clemson. We do not have that. No. We do not. No. No, there is not a quarterback controversy. As far as DJ's our starter. DJ's our leader. Clemson coach William Christopher Sweeney said, nothing's changed there. Well, he may be the starter, but I can tell you what did change.
Mm-hmm.
The second half of the game, the end of the game against Syracuse, Clemson was in a whole bunch of trouble. Trailing 21-7 in the second quarter. It is looking like could this be it? Remember I said, go to the cider mill? But monitor, and all of a sudden, there's a whole bunch of people at the cider mill going, wait,
yeah.
I was steered wrong. This could be the big event. DJ, 13 to 21, 2 interceptions, a fumble that led to a touchdown by Syracuse, and they pull the plug on him. Freshman 5-star recruit Cade Klubnik gets put into the game. It's not like he turned into Tom Brady. But 2 for 4, but they started scoring touchdowns and led the dramatic comeback. Clemson wins 27-21, keeps the national title hopes alive. And there was a spark when he got in the game. I think this game is mainly on the Clemson defense for a second half shutout and all that. But Klubnik was there for the series that mattered, and Clemson wins. So if we don't have a quarterback controversy, because William Christopher would never steer us wrong, Pat, what do we have here? because I think I know where the fans are thinking.
Oh, yeah. The fans think there's a controversy. If we don't have a controversy, we have a situation, at least. We have a situation.
Ongoing saga. Ongoing saga.
Oh, and it has been ongoing really since the first game, or before that, since Klubnik got on campus and everybody saw, okay, this guy is a legit five-star dude. And the first game against Georgia Tech, Klubnik got in late, game was in hand, but he looked like he looked Saturday in terms of there's a lot of energy, he's moving fast, he's making fast decisions, they are moving the ball, they score. Then DJ really has had a good season. He's played well for the most part. He certainly played better than he did last year, markedly better. And everybody loves DJ because he is a really good guy. You know, I mean, he is one of those team first guys. He's almost painfully like deferential, but he's a good teammate. And so people have very much around the program have kind of circled the wagons around him, but they were in big trouble at home against Syracuse. And it was just one drive after another into scoring range that would blow up. And it wasn't all him, but he did make some key mistakes there. And there's no doubt. Look, Dabo changed quarterbacks because he was afraid they were going to lose if they stuck with DJ. So the quarterback changed. They score 17 points in the fourth quarter with Klubnik leading the way. And, yeah, the best thing Klubnik did was to fall down when he got hit right out of bounds on a third and 25 on what was called a late hit that kept the drive alive, that got them going and got them scoring. I think it was a good call because, first of all, it was just a dumb play, and I don't think you reward a dumb play because it's third and 25. He goes out of bounds 15 yards short of the sticks, and you go over and hit him in a borderline spot there. What was bad was then Clemson got away with a similar hit on a third down later that would have kept the Syracuse drive alive. But anyway, you are correct that the Clemson defense was the star of the game. The flags also were a factor, but the quarterback situation was a factor. And at the very least, I would say, Dan, if you don't have a controversy, you at least have a situation where you might have a quicker hook with DJ going forward in games that are close and say, hey, if we need a spark, we got a spark. We got this guy right here. And you hope DJ's strong enough mentally to handle that without spending time looking over his shoulder, per se. The Clemson schedule is not that hard going forward, okay? They've got an off week, and then they're at Notre Dame, which sounds good, but frankly, shouldn't be that hard a game. Louisville at home, Miami at home, South Carolina at home. The South Carolina game is getting a little more interesting. But
we're going to get to the Cock Commanders. Don't worry.
Yeah. Yeah. But I you know what? I think you can manage this situation non-controversy and be okay for the next three games. And then we'll see where they are for the rivalry game.
Well, I think the issue will be, you know, Clemson's not in this to just win the ACC.
No.
Can you win the national title with DJ Uiagalelei? Now, DJ Uiagalelei, I agree with you. He's playing much, much better this year. And it changed. I think we had a topic. Does this change the view of whether Clemson can win the national title? Mm-hmm. Because everyone sort of is like, Clemson's not Clemson. Well, here they are. Klubnik was like, you know, he wasn't just five star. He was top five or top seven in
top
the country.
Top one, according to some people.
Someone. I mean, out of Austin Westlake, which alone, if you're the starting quarterback at Austin Westlake, you're practically a five star. It's like the competition to be that guy. Massive recruiting win for Clemson. And, you know, the goal, I think, would have been, well, DJ performs and he goes pro. And, you know, it just keeps that train going of great quarterbacks at Clemson. That isn't the case right now, and anything's on the table. DJ doesn't look like a pro quarterback at this point. You know, he may be the UCLA quarterback next year. I don't know. Like, this could really spiral. Yeah. But do you take these three games at Notre Dame, which will be a wild environment, and who the hell knows? Like, Notre Dame's defense isn't that bad at times, and, you know, they got players. The Louisville and then Miami's just a train wreck. We'll get to them a little bit, maybe. To prep for what would be a very challenging end of the year. South Carolina, ACC title game, and then two games you want to win.
Yeah.
Like, they're not just in there for participation trophy. This isn't just, can we get by, like Michigan last year, can we get by Ohio State, and then I don't even care what the hell happens.
Right.
This is like, no, we're here to win. We're not here to sit there and let Georgia just roll to the title and have to hear about it at the country club with all the Bulldog fans yapping again. So Clemson is going to go, is here to win. I don't know. That's the issue. It is interesting. Like I said, Klubnik did not come in and just start dropping 45-yard dimes and all this stuff, but there is a lot there. But do you prep for it? I don't know. They need more out of DJ. They need better ball, certainly turnovers. That was what was going to kill them. Great effort, by the way, by Syracuse. Great effort by their defense.
Yeah, I'm super impressed. Like, I went into that game thinking they can't hang, and they damn near won. I mean, they had Clemson on the ropes big time, so... Very impressed with Syracuse.
Very impressive by Syracuse. That is a very tall order, winning, not just beating Clemson. Very few people beating them at Clemson. So Dino Babers' program has got nothing to feel bad about. I'm sure they're very frustrated right now, but that fact that went down and they acquitted themselves so well, was it. So, all right, we'll keep an eye on that one. Tell you where there isn't a QB controversy. Speaking of transfers, I guess a little. You know, the transfer portal is just horrible, Pat. It's going to ruin everything.
Guardrails.
We got to stop these transfers. I kind of agree on the transfer portal, but I mean, again, another thing that it's like, okay. Probably don't want them just transferring easy, but guess what? Bo Nix ain't complaining. Again, don't hear the players complain about this. Uh-uh. Hey, you should have stayed at that crappy self-immolation of a Auburn program, Bo.
Where's your loyalty?
Yeah, where's their loyalty? They torched their program over and over for this kid. And guess what? He gets out of there, heads to Oregon. Dan Lanning shows up. He's with Dan Lanning. And that offense was incredible. And the Ducks, after an absolute one-punch knockout loss to Georgia in the opener, haven't lost since. 45-30, they beat UCLA on Saturday. Fourth largest crowd in Outson Stadium history. Game day is there. Dare I say it was the Chip Kelly era repeat. And guess who was on the other sideline? Yeah. Who had a heck of an offense at UCLA. He couldn't keep up. A great line by John Canzano of, he's up in Portland as the radio. He's got this really good newsletter, Bald Face Truth by, you got a Substack. Yeah. I don't know, whatever it is. Really writes great columns for it. Used to be at the Oregonian. Dan Lanning out chipped Chip.
Yeah.
Three, fourth down, they go for it. An onside kick, a super aggressive passing. Bo Nix, 20 of 28. Tony Franklin, 108 catches for 132 yards, two TDs, and a 49 touchdown. UCLA had 448 yards of offense, just one interception, 6.5 yards a play, and didn't punt and got blown out.
Yeah, I
think Chip's flying home going, what the hell just hit me?
Yeah.
Which is exactly what used to happen when you showed up at Oregon and go, I don't even know what the hell happened over there.
Yeah.
Super impressive by Oregon.
Extremely impressive. I mean, that offense just rolled. They physically punished UCLA. They could not hang defensively up front. I mean, they blew them off the ball. And Bo Nix is just, he's a whole new guy, from what we saw at Auburn. He is playing at an incredible level. He's with Kenny Dillingham, 32-year-old offensive coordinator, who was at Auburn with him in 2019, and then he went to Florida State 2020 and 21. Things weren't going very well with Mike Norvell, so he goes then to Oregon, and I'm sure that was a big factor in Nick's going there. But Dillingham's a rising star in the profession. He's an Arizona State graduate. They have an opening. I don't know whether you hire a 32-year-old head coach, but he's an intriguing guy, that's for sure. But Nix is just, he's playing phenomenally. 17 touchdowns, 3 interceptions on the season. He's run for another 8 scores, and that offense has just been magnificent since the first game. And now we got to figure out what to do with that first game from a playoff perspective. Maybe.
Let's talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you put them back in as a one loss? And now, look, a whole bunch of stuff's got to happen, right? If TCU and Clemson and Ohio State or Michigan all go undefeated and the SEC is going to get one. Sorry, you're out. But yeah. if this is, we're way early. There's a lot, lot of stuff can happen. So, but if you're in that mix, like if you're sitting there in the committee room going, all right, Georgia's one and whatever, Clemson's two and Ohio State's three. And then we got to pick somebody for four. Oregon's got enough, but they're looking good. Can you re up that game?
Yeah.
And I think they are not allowed to consider that. Or my guess is it's probably like, you know, you can't sit there and go, is this going to be aesthetically pleasing?
Right.
But,
right.
You know, do you say this is a different team? Because it is. Teams are different week one to week, whatever, 14 or whatever.
I would say especially that one. I mean, that is new coaching staff, new quarterback.
Right. Fly across the country and play Georgia in Atlanta.
Yeah. I mean, they walked into the Lions Den. They took on the hardest assignment of anybody on opening weekend. And they got destroyed. But since then, they've scored 40 points or more every single game. Still don't know if they have the defense to run the table the rest of the way, but they're very good and so much better than they were that first week. So that if you do end up with three or fewer undefeated teams, and there's a debate about one-loss teams, what to do with Oregon if they get there at 12-1 would be an interesting one.
I think they would need also not a one-loss. They don't need, like, Georgia beating Tennessee by a couple points, you know, a close great game, and then Tennessee sitting there, or Bama winning the title.
Yeah.
Or Georgia getting to the thing and losing to Bama or LSU, whoever they might lose to, you know, like, they're going to need some help. They need help. But look, they have Cal on the road and Colorado on the road the next 2 weeks. Then they come home for Washington. End of the year gets interesting. Utah visits on the 19th of November. You got the Civil War game, which I don't think they're calling the Civil War because there might be a Civil War. I don't know. Civil War game. Anyway, Oregon State. They visit Corvallis. That's not an easy game, and that's not an easy game ever. And the Beavers are certainly capable of that. And then you'd have a Pac-12 title game, which is now top two teams,
right?
So certainly could be USC, could be a rematch with UCLA. I don't know. So you're going to get a bump. It'll be the debate. Do you want it? Because it's very likely that Georgia sits there at one, and you're like, oh no. You feel better if it was like, all right, we're putting them up against Clemson. They're the three seeders, you know, or somehow that works out. Or it's Tennessee. Georgia loses to Tennessee and you know, stumble somewhere else or whatever. But it's certainly going to be tricky. So that was an excellent performance, though, by Oregon. Other super impressive victory on Saturday night. TCU does it again. Four consecutive victories over ranked teams. Horned Frogs, 7-0. They trail 28-10 to Kansas State and reel off 28 consecutive points to win the game. Obviously, Adrian Martinez was not in the game late for the Wildcats. That was a huge factor. Another transfer. It's going to be my transfer. I'm just going to ring out transfers all the time. This pod. That's my subtle hint. Subtle play. Max Duggan. Kendre Miller had 153 and two scores. Max Duggan had three touchdowns, 280. They came back against Oklahoma State. They came back. This is legit. I watched a lot of that game Saturday night. I was kind of, it was on FS1, but it was easily the most interesting game. I think ABC had the whiteout, but it was a blowout.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's other stuff. So, TCU just keep Sonny Dykes' program just keep looking good. They're at West Virginia. They get Tech. They're at Texas. They're at Baylor. And then Iowa State. A lot of their heaviest lifting is behind them for now.
I'm just super impressed. They've been fun. I mean, the Big 12 has been fun to watch. Good games, exciting games. And TCU's been absolutely in the mix of that. You go back that, you know, great back and forth game day game against Kansas. Then last week, they're down 16 to Oklahoma State. They rally, they get it into overtime, and they win. Then this week, down 18 and come back and win. And they looked like they were had no chance of coming back when it was 28-10. And yeah, Adrian Martinez had gotten hurt, but the backup, Will Howard, came in and played great for like two quarters. And then he got hurt, and then that K-State was really screwed. But it was 28-10, and then they scored three straight possessions and stopped K-State two straight. And that was an impressive response right then and there. They just said, we're not going down. We turned that game around completely. And Sonny Dykes, if he's not the National Coach of the Year, he's on the very short list, because that was a program that – had just stalled out under Gary Patterson. They bring him in, they're 7-0. And as you said, yeah, they've beaten a lot of their top competition in that conference now. There's no easy games in that league. I wouldn't shock me, and I don't think it would shock you, if you go to Morgantown and lose this next week. Every single week is just an adventure there. So, but they've been fun. They got the Sonny Dykes wearing the Hypnotoad sweatshirt. I want one of those. I want the Hypnotoad logo on my body.
What is a Hypnotoad, Pat? What is a Hypnotoad?
What's that?
What is a Hypnotoad?
A Hypnotoad supposedly, allegedly, is like this thing from, what's the show, Futurama? We might need to call in Sean. He might know more about this.
Sean, do you know anything about this?
Yeah, Futurama, correct.
Okay.
What is Futurama?
A character that's the Hypnotoad?
Yes, it's for the future-based programming. The people watch the Hypnotoad as it, washes over them, and they get hypnotized. It's fun in the future.
Well,
is it a drug?
Is it a drug?
Is this a code? Dragon?
Isn't there some place where if you lick a toad or a frog, you get some sort of psychedelic hit?
I believe that in the 70s, and maybe still currently, people lick. There's a specific genus of toad where you lick their back. And it has it's either a fungi or some chemical that has you hallucinate by doing so.
Wow. We've tapped into some expertise here from Sean. This is impressive.
I love how he's just like, that's what I heard. I don't know. I think I read that somewhere. It was like Newsweek or something.
I promise I'm not out here licking toads, people.
I mean, Texas. Look at Texas. State of Texas. Just legalize weed, man. The people are out there licking toads. This would be so much easier if you could just drive down the store, get an edible. You get the tax revenue. You got guys hunting toads to lick. And it's being promoted by Sonny Dykes, one of the great figures in Texas high school and college football.
And an upstanding Christian university like TCU.
I don't want the sweatshirt. I want the toad to lick.
I want the sweatshirt.
Get me the toad. I'll lick the toad. I'll cover the game. See what I come up with as a writer.
That'll be a challenge.
Maybe. Maybe not. Might be better. I mean, would anyone notice? I don't know.
I've been having some sport with the Hypnotoad thing and just kind of changing TCU's nickname to the Hypnotoads on Twitter. And some guy was really like chastising me. Do you mean to tell me you haven't watched a single episode of Futurama? No, I haven't, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
Listen, I'm like 4-0 in the MAC this year. I don't have time.
You're too busy breaking down the developments in the upper Midwest there.
Yeah, I don't have time for this Futurama. All right, I'll try. I watched the Stranger Things. That was as cool as I get.
Okay, there you go.
Anyway, TCU, it's still a long way to go, but this is a really good team, and this is a team that has incredible gumption and doesn't care if they're down. Now, can they get down like that on the road and do it?
Yeah,
we'll see.
Challenge.
Dream season right now for a school that's had some dream season. They go 13-0 once and win the Rose Bowl with the Red Rifle.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But this would be a real chance. The idea of TCU in the playoff is kind of fun, and they're making up for Texas football, I can tell you that. Because, Pat, have you ever seen a team get penalized 14 times and the other team gets zero?
I haven't. And believe it or not, the Texas fans noticed that stat.
Oh, they noticed. And I know, if one of those teams was about to acrimoniously leave a conference high and dry, we would never have any fans suggest that there was the fix was in. Texas shot themselves in the foot so many times. Three turnovers, 14 penalties, though, for I think like 136 yards or a lot. Oklahoma State, zero penalties at all for 0 yards. Oklahoma State wins the game. beating the Longhorns. I mean, yeah, it was 14 penalties. A lot of them were like false starts.
Yeah.
It was a mess. And I get it. T-Boone Pickens Stadium there with its like 8 inches of sideline. The fans are truly on top of you. I think one guy, I think there's like one row that literally is in the, encroaches into the corner of the end zone.
Playing surface, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's on. I don't know. Yeah, there's no room, so they're just screaming at you. Anyway, how did it go? How are the Longhorns taking this penalty differential, Pat?
Not terribly well.
Oh, okay.
Not terribly well. My friend Rob Daniels, who is a podcast listener and is a research wizard, gave me the stat last night. This is only the second time this century in FBS football that one team has been penalized 14 or more times and the other team has been penalized zero. The other time was 2001. It was Alabama getting penalized 15 times and UCLA zero. So it's the first time in a conference game with that conference's officials. And yes, it is. It's surprisingly coincidental that, yes, Texas and Oklahoma are leaving, and this was a game Oklahoma State needed to win to stay in the picture for the Big 12 championship game and to keep Texas out of the picture of the Big 12 championship game. But here's my theory, Dan, my theory on the conspiracy theories.
Okay.
If the fix was really in, you at some point in time, especially there in the fourth quarter, you drop a flag on Oklahoma State so it doesn't look so obvious, right? Ah, get them for offsides, get them for, you know,
right. False legal start. Man downfield, yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, you cover your tracks. You don't let a 14-0 count go by. So that's my theory on why the fix is not in. It's just too obvious.
It's fair. That would be the smarter way. It happens in hockey all the time or basketball, right? Like all of a sudden there's five straight fouls or three straight power plays. And, you know, someone breathes on someone. Foul, you know, you got to even out the whistle. Yeah, I don't know. Texas is, I think we had a segment a couple weeks ago. How would you consider the Quinn Ewers being injured for the playoff? Right. Scrap that one.
Scrap that one. Yeah. The mulligan scenario is over. No doubt about that. And they were lucky to win last week against Iowa State. They could have won this game too, and they let a double digit lead get away, as Steve Sarkisian teams there have been known to do. And Sark is now 10-10 as the highly compensated coach of the Longhorns. Ewers had the 3 interceptions, but they tackled terribly. I mean, you know, they're just not a very good team. They're okay. They've got talent. They haven't put it together. They're inconsistent. They're like a lot of other teams right now in college football, which isn't what Texas aspires to be.
No. Ewers was just tucking balls all over. A lot of throwaways. Just was not. The other one was Arch was going to decommit because Quinn was so good. I think Quinn Ewers is the starter next year. I think Arch is happy to be the backup guy, but I don't think there's a lot of fear out there. Yeah. What does he have, the Bentley or does he have the Lambo? Whatever he's got.
Yeah. Yeah, Ewers. Yeah, I think it's the Lambo.
I got the Lambo. He might get another parking ticket if he doesn't step it up a little bit.
I mean,
he looks good. You like to see a little bit more. But Texas, hey, here, go ahead.
Texas is 5-3, and here's their remaining schedule: at Kansas State, TCU, at Kansas, Baylor. I mean, I sure don't see them going 4-0. I think it's more likely they go 0-4, and probably somewhere in between. If they're 2-2, and you get in at 7-5. That's not very good.
3-1, yeah. I mean, that's a tough road. So, yeah, it is what it is. Year two may be leading to year three of the rebuild. But, hey, at least you're not year five and losing to South Carolina.
Speaking of the other team in the state.
We're going to get to the Cock Commanders because that is a fantastic story that Shane Beamer is putting. So, bear with. Don't get angry, Cock Commander fans. We're going to get to you. But, man, A&M. 3-4 now.
Unbelievable.
On the season. This was, I mean, they're on the road. It's an incredible environment. And South Carolina is much improved. They've now won 4 in a row. But it just is a team that finds ways to lose.
Yeah.
Don't give up a 100-yard opening kickoff return. Opening kickoff. Like, their heads aren't in the game. I mean, great play by Xavier Leggett, but come on. You know, they get into a 17-0 hole on the road. I guess this is a brutal to build back out of. They just can't do it. They end up having Connor Wegman, their star recruit quarterback, in there. He doesn't look ready. The team, there's penalties. It's something about this offense. And like, does Jimbo Fisher end up giving up play calling at some point? It's like you got a talk radio show in College Station. Like, that's your topic for the week. Like, it's been your topic all year.
Yeah.
It's like this offense is like dragging an anchor. It's like watching somebody try to run in a pool. It's just like, they're never open. It's never easy. Like, where's just the slant, the bubble screens, college offenses are often so easy, but that's because you need to make them easy. There's just something off about this team. They're 3-4. And they still have tough games at LSU. They got Ole Miss. UMass is coming. Look out. I mean, do they get bowl eligible?
I don't know.
They owe him like $85 million. They can't fire him. How many of these? They signed 30 kids last year in the, like, statistically the greatest recruiting class of all time. Some of them are playing, but it's certainly not enough. How many of them stay? You're always going to lose some of those guys because six defensive end sign or whatever. There's not that many spots.
Right.
Like, can he keep – is the transfer portal going to blow open out of College Station? What happens, Pat?
Boy, I don't know, man. I mean, it's a mess. It's a big time mess. And the fans were already upset, and that was before you do something like this, before you lose to a South Carolina team that they've beaten every they have never lost to South Carolina since joining the league. So this was a bad loss for the Aggies. And yeah, I mean, you just got yourself into this disaster from the get-go. You're down 17-0 in 5 minutes. South Carolina's done nothing on offense, you know? South Carolina's drive, kickoff, return, touchdown, four-play, zero-yard field goal drive, and a four-play, 19-yard touchdown drive. South Carolina has 36 yards of total offense, but they're leading you 17-0. So that's on you to a large degree just for screwing up too much. And then you get back into the game, and then South Carolina makes more plays again and pulls away from you. So it's bad, and it's at that point where, yeah, what do you do? Because you can't get out of it. It's like Jimbo at A&M, Kirk Ferentz right now at Iowa, Sark at Texas, Mario Cristobal at Miami, Brent Venables at Oklahoma, Mel Tucker at Michigan State. You are in deep with those coaches, and it's not going very well. How do you get out of it, or how do you fix it? I don't know the answers. And at A&M, you know, they're the one place where they would probably be the most likely, I think, to just lose their minds and throw money at the problem. But that's so much money, even by A&M standards, I don't think they can do it.
I mean, A&M had this game to win, to come back. And a good team 5 years in, Texas A&M is supposed to be better than South Carolina. And you're 5 years in, and they've got a second-year coach. And they, like, all the things. You've got all these players. You have a national championship coach. They've got a second-year young guy, right? You're supposed to win this game. Cock Commanders fumble in the third quarter, deep in their own end. A&M scores like 24-yard drive to make it 24-21 South Carolina. The defense then holds Carolina three and out. Punt, A&M chance. Nope, five plays, 19 yards. Defense holds again, three and out. A&M gets the ball. What do? They do their own three and out. Like, that's where the game had their chance to win. Two straight drives, go down, take the lead. Then Carolina gets the ball again, and this is where they won the game. Eight plays, 80 yards, tick 5-plus minutes off the clock in the fourth quarter. They just went out, and it was like, someone's going to win the game now, the tougher, better team, and it was South Carolina. And that's what would just crush me as an A&M fan. Is it's like, we had chance after chance in the second half of this game. We dug out of the hole, and we're doing three and outs against South Carolina. And it's
I like your point though about, like, it just looks so hard, and why, like, you watch TCU, and they're able to just make these plays routinely all the time. And then you watch Texas A&M, and it's like, why is everything so laborious? You know, why, as you said, nobody's open, or the quarterback can't get it there. The hole's open and then they close. You can't protect the quarterback, whatever the case is. It's just like they make offense look as hard as it can possibly look.
And you're playing a true freshman, right? Who's got skill, but like dumb this offense down.
Yeah.
Screen pass, slant. Again, the simple plays don't, everything's just, it just feels like you're going against sandpaper there. So on the flip, South Carolina, as they got destroyed. This is a recurring theme, by the way. It might tell you just exactly how good Georgia is, which we don't even, no one talks about because they haven't played it. 48-7, they got crushed by Georgia. Similar to what Oregon. Oregon hasn't lost since. South Carolina hasn't lost since.
That's right.
And they have won four consecutive games. They're 5-2. They're 2-2 in the Southeastern Conference. Spencer Rattler, transfer portal sucks, is leading the QB. He's 12-25 for 168, but whatever. Marshawn Lloyd, great running attack. They're chanting Beamer ball at the end. Shane Beamer gets this job, and there are all sorts of coaches around the country going, you know, what has this guy done to deserve this job, an SEC job, when other than have Frank Beamer as his father? He is not an offense coordinator anywhere. He's not a defense coordinator. He was, I don't know, what, mid-30s, early-30s?
Yeah, he's young.
Young, right? And, yeah. I mean, if you wanted to hear off the record coaches crapping on a hire, it was Shane Beamer going to South Carolina. And you've kind of heard some of it on the right. There's been a lot of doubts. Like, eh, this guy, right, there's a Kentucky thing. You know what? There's Shane Beamer ball at the end. He has got the program there. He's recruiting very hard. The team looks competent. And, you know, they're good. And look, they got Mizzou and at Vandy. They can very easily get to 7-2. Then they're at Florida,
right,
Tennessee, at Clemson. So it's gonna get tough at the end. But hey, if you're a South Carolina fan, and there are a lot of them, and if there's ever a program that maybe fan passion least equates to on-field success historically, it might be South Carolina. Right. Well, right now you got something to go crazy about.
Yeah, the fans have persevered through thin and thin.
A couple of years thinner. Ball coach coming back for a second act, which even then
couple
you're
years of ball coach, couple years of Lou Holtz, but you know, And I mean, what Beamer, it is Beamer ball. It absolutely is. They've blocked five kicks this year. They get the special teams touchdown to start that game. And then big stat for you, Dan, they were a wreck turnover margin wise at the beginning of the year. They were -7 in their first three games. Since then, they're +1. They're still turning the ball over frequently, but their defense now is getting turnovers, which is Beamer-esque, right? They've intercepted 8 passes in the last 4 games. They intercepted 3 against Charlotte, 3 against South Carolina State, and then 1 each against Kentucky and Texas A&M. Recovered a couple fumbles, blocked a kick against Kentucky. That's just manufacturing, field position manufacturing ways to win. So I give them credit for, you know, and Beamer is recruiting well. There's a lot of high hopes for the future, but for now, he's manufacturing ways for that team to be competitive in an increasingly difficult division.
He's 45, by the way. Just looks young.
Is he really?
He's older than he looks. Yeah. So he's got the boyish good looks as well as the 5-2 team.
I think it was the mayonnaise bath last year that helped his skin.
He's definitely interesting. I'll give him this too. Like, he didn't mind arguing with people.
And oh no.
Yeah.
No,
there's no, right? He'll take anyone on. I mean, he's got 10 4-stars coming. I know they've gone head to head in the state of South Carolina against Clemson. And he's got this kid Marquis Anderson coming as a good player. They got sign in top 250 guys, and he's won a few battles in state against Clemson, which is not easy. When Clemson, at this point, these kids that are coming out of high school, since they're about, you know, 6 years old, Clemson's been awesome.
Yeah,
you know, right. If you don't know, they're in a whole lot going on in the state of South Carolina to like distract you. So like, this is the team. This is everyone's favorite team all of a sudden, this generation. And you're winning some recruiting battles. So South Carolina's got a lot to offer on the recruiting trail. Shane Beamer's getting it done. So he is the name. The last name may have got him the job, but he's proven that so far he deserves it at that level. So pretty interesting. You just never know with these hires. All right, let's get to LSU, staying in the SEC. We may get to the Big Ten, or we may not. It was a sleepy weekend. in the Big Ten.
Extremely.
Again, like, it's networks paying a lot of money, and I don't know that they have done the research on.
Yeah. Right. Have you seen the Big Ten West, gentlemen?
Like, what do you do? I guess you're adding UCLA and USC, but yeah, like, you know. You're always going to get a number because there's enough fans of these teams. But, man, it was a little sleepy right. This weekend. And Ohio State's like, they just play the big noon game. Like, it takes their A broadcasting team and all their hype. And you're like, who's watching? Who wants to watch this? Like, Ohio State's.
Ohio State schedule has been nothing but a parade of disappointments. We can get to that. You want to do LSU?
Well, let's do it right now. We'll get to LSU.
Okay.
But I mean, yeah, it's like, okay, maybe the Notre Dame game is exciting. Notre Dame's not very good. Maybe the Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. No, Wisconsin's not good. Well, Iowa, you know, they can give you a game. No, they can't. They can't have no offense at all. It's like next week, Penn State,
Michigan State. Oh, no.
And let me just say this. This is wrong. And this is TV screwing things up. The Ohio State at Penn State game should every single time be the whiteout. Yes. It should be prime time, under the lights, Happy Valley, 100 and whatever thousand they get in there in white, and it should be the Ohio State game. On the off years, you find a different team. It should not be played at noon. Some games should be played at noon. Ohio State, Michigan, noon. You always play at noon. Mm-hmm. Play it at noon. Ohio State at Penn State. You can play Penn State, Ohio State at noon, but it's, well, Fox got the thing. It should be at night. I don't know if that's going to be a very competitive game. Penn State looked better against a completely undermined Minnesota team, whatever. But after watching them get mauled by Michigan, maybe Penn State's better equipped for a more up-tempo, you know, as a defense. But That game, Nick, we'll talk more about that. This game should be at night. The idea that's at noon. But, yeah, it's like Ohio State plays, you blink and you don't even remember. Like, oh, yeah, Buckeyes played again. Yeah.
I mean, it was like that game at least started off being entertaining because it was like, oh, my God, Iowa had an off week and somehow got worse on offense. I mean, what they did was indescribably bad to start that game. Spencer Petras, you know, was, God love him, he has just been a pinata deservedly because he just has performed so poorly. But the first pass, the first play of the game, he throws directly to an Ohio State safety who had to be sitting there saying, seriously, you're throwing this to me? Because there's nobody that he could have been throwing it to. And then the next possession, Petras gets sacked and he fumbles because he doesn't secure the ball. And it was just downhill from there. And they finally put another quarterback in the game, at least for the first time all year, Alex Padilla. But he was worse. And Iowa had six turnovers. It's a complete train wreck. Brian Ferentz is the absolute poster boy for nepotism as an overmatched offensive coordinator. And I don't know what you do about it.
You replace him in the middle of the season.
That's what you do at other places in the Big Ten. But do you think the coach's kid's getting canned in the middle of the season?
Do it all over. Like, no, it's not. He's not. But like, okay, Boise State fired Tim Plow, their offensive coordinator, and their QB Hank Beckmeyer left. Boise State's 4-0 since then. They're 4-0. They just won at Air Force, right? Like, the season's not over.
No.
And at what point are you doing something for the kids on your team that supposedly also your family and you'll do anything for? Like, Boise State salvaged its season. It was headed to the worst season Boise State in decades. It didn't, remember, we talked about this at the beginning. Boise State didn't look like Boise State. Well, they made a move, and now they look like Boise State. And good for them. It just wasn't working. You make a move. And at that time, it was like, oh, my God, their OC's gone. Their Bachmeyer's a good court. He's gone. This team's going to, you know what? They didn't. They end up doing it. So, you do that. One of the funnier columns, at least to me, just journalistically, I've read, is Doug LaMarie, he's the columnist for the Cleveland.com and the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Cleveland is in Ohio, okay? Long time, obviously covers Ohio State a great deal. He wrote a column yesterday saying Brian Ferentz should be fired, even though Brian Ferentz is a coach at Iowa. I think Doug was just so offended watching this.
I'm offended. Everybody should be offended. Like,
just, what the Cleveland.com weighed in on whether the Iowa offensive coordinator should be fired. This is hysterical. That is so, like, the people of Cleveland are logging on. He's got readers all over. He does a great job. And I love the column. It was the right column, by the way. I'm not in any way despairing it. But it takes a certain level of just outrage and then journalistic guts to be like, I ain't writing about Ohio State this. I'm going to write about Iowa's. This is deep. This is message board stuff normally. He's just like, this is so bad. I am going to fire this guy. Even though none of my readers are Iowa fans.
But if you go to that game and you watch that game and say, I'm writing a column on this game,
that's the story column of the game. Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, it is offensive. It really is. And that, think how it would be to be a fan of that program. That Kirk Ferentz, who the fans put him up on that pedestal. Kirk could do no wrong. And so they certainly empowered him, but now it is an abuse of power. It is an incredible abuse of power to me that he is able to continue having his son who is as the offensive coordinator when he stinks and that offense stinks. And if they had even a competent offense, they would be good. They would win the Big Ten West because their defense is lights out and their special teams, as always, are really good. But the offense is the literal worst in the country. Now below your UMass Minutemen, below New Mexico, below New Mexico State, below Colorado State. I mean, it's just gross. It's sad to watch, really, because that program, it is absolutely an abuse of power, in my opinion.
All right. Well, you can get in the comment section of the Cleveland.com. It was great. I enjoyed it. All right, to the LSU. Jaden Daniels, transfer portal, ruining the game. Jaden Daniels comes, should have stayed at Arizona State where they fired their coach and going on, all that. That was such a healthy environment out there. He has gotten better and better as this year has gone on. Those of us who stayed on the Brian Kelly camp when everyone's making fun of his bad accent and fake accent and all that.
I'm here with my family.
Looking pretty good. They are 5-2. They trailed Ole Miss early, 14-3, 17-3, I think they were down. Second half, 4 touchdowns. Defense steps up, shuts down Ole Miss. That running attack could not get going late in the game. And super impressive win by LSU. And hey, baby, Tigers are back. Tigers are back.
Not only are they back, they're back in time for the Alabama game. They each have an off week now, and then they'll play in Baton Rouge November 5th. And that game had been losing a lot of luster, but it has regained some. November 5th in the SEC is fantastic. You got Tennessee at Georgia, Alabama at LSU. Let's decide both divisions. Just not completely, but just about. We'll take a big step to knowing who's going to play in that championship game there. But yeah, props. Look, Brian Kelly, we've always said, is a very good coach. He doesn't not know what he's doing. It took a while, but they know what they're doing, and they do have some resolve to this team too. Kind of like TCU, where they've been behind all. They were behind the whole game against Florida State, nearly pulled that out at the end. They were behind against Mississippi State. They did win that one in the fourth. They were behind against Auburn on the road, came back and won there. They got behind, stayed behind against Tennessee. But then again, they rallied against Mississippi, who was undefeated at that point. So, and if you remember, amongst the Brian Kelly weird stuff of the offseason was him dancing in an extremely painful fashion with a recruit who had committed, I believe.
Yeah.
And Lane Kiffin made fun of him on Twitter for that. It's like, really? What are you doing? And so today, of course, LSU has a picture of Brian Kelly wearing a shirt showing him dancing after that victory and tweeted it back at Lane. So a little bit of SEC give and take. Always, nothing's ever dull if Lane Kiffin's involved, but it's good to have Brian Kelly in the league too.
Yeah, he's not going to back down either. And look, we got 2 weeks to hype that game, and certainly we'll talk about it. But Brian Kelly sat at Notre Dame for a long time and dreamt of being able to take on Alabama with equal athletes. And he's going to be, he may not be equal, but it's close. And so it's going to be very interesting. That's going to be a very interesting game in a couple weeks. But LSU is good. They've turned it around in a big way. The loss early to FSU was wild. And, you know, his first game, first coach, all that. And then the loss to Tennessee doesn't look so bad. So pretty interesting where the Tigers are. It's going to be a big game. All right, we like to hand out our Heisman each week, opposed to waiting to the end of the year. So here is our small sample Heisman.
We don't give out one award at the end of the year. We give it out week to week.
It's the Small Sample Heisman on the College Football Inquirer podcast.
Pat, who you got?
I'm going to go with a quarterback who began the season indefinitely out of action, missed the first game. There was concern he might miss the whole season. Came back second week, and he's played great all year. Sam Hartman from Wake Forest against Boston College on Saturday, 25 of 40 for 313 yards and 5 touchdowns. He's thrown for 21 TDs on the year now, only 3 interceptions. He's really good, and Wake Forest is sneaky good. Talk about teams. We've talked about a couple teams here with losses that don't look very bad. They lost by 6 in overtime to Clemson and really had the game, had a chance to win it and got conservative at the end of regulation. But that's their only loss. They are 6-1. Win over Liberty that looks better and better because Liberty's 7-1. They've still got some quality opponents to play. But Wake Forest is kind of like hanging around there in the periphery of this in terms of maybe a New Year's Six Bowl. If things really fall apart, maybe they could get to the playoff. I don't think so because Clemson has beaten them head-to-head. But I'm happy to see Sam Hartman back and having another really good season for the Demon Deacons.
Yeah, they have not buckled since that Clemson deal. My small sample Heisman is going to go to Tulane running back Tyzae Spears. And it's sort of a group award. He had 24 carries, 125 yards, a touchdown in a huge victory over Memphis that moved the green wave to 7-1. I said something nice about him last week, but this is the story of the American. Tulane is rolling. They're ranked. They should continue to climb the rankings. They have a victory at Kansas State. This is a good football team. And Michael Pratt played a good game at quarterback. They jumped Memphis early and then kind of had to hold on late, but they won it. And unexpected story of the American is Tulane. They set up a end of the year where they could be playing Cincinnati back-to-back. I think everyone expects Cincinnati to be good. I don't know how many people expected Tulane, but congratulations to all of the Green Wave for rolling along. Also, our legal correspondent here, Craig Mordock, made a tremendous batch of jambalaya, I believe. He was sending me pictures.
I did see the pictures of that.
Yeah, he was sending pictures of his jambalaya. So
looked very good.
So they got everything going on down there at Tulane. There's food, there's running backs, there's quarterbacks, there's victories, all that. So
I'm happy for them. It's awesome. But while we're on the subject of the American Athletic Conference, can I please take a minute to kill Cincinnati? I'm thoroughly appalled with the 6-1 or 7-1, 6-1 Bearcats, who were my lock of the week at SMU and had the game on lock the entire time. They were giving 4, I believe, and they're up 29-14 midway through the fourth quarter. They've got the game under control, and then they just absolutely stop playing, and I'm furious at them. They get a field goal block that would have made it 32-14.
Wow.
They give up a touchdown that's a fluke, bounces off one guy, another guy catches it in the end zone for SMU. Cincinnati goes nowhere. They kick it back to them. The game is going to end. Cincinnati's defense is good. They've got them stopped. Oh, no. Let's rough the passer. Oh, let's commit pass interference. Oh, and then best of all, when a guy's run out of bounds, let's rip his helmet off and get another personal foul and let him march down there and get a doink touchdown and blow the cover. Boo, Bearcats. Made me mad.
Wah, wah, wah. This will increase our degenerate Cincinnati gambling audience. You know, they won the game. They're 6-1.
That's not good enough. Yeah. Good teams win. Great teams cover.
That's why I should have picked Bowling Green. All right. We've said many mean things. Let's try to say something nice, Pat. Is there anything in your heart that will tell you to say something nice?
All right. I'm going to say something nice, kind of, not really, about Weber State for making themselves known on the national stage and doing something I've never seen happen in a game before, which is to airmail 4 punt snaps for safeties in the same game. I can't say for sure if it was the same long snapper every single time. If it was, props to Coach Jay Hill for loyalty to his guy, or perhaps more realistically, only having one long snapper and nobody else on the team who could do it, but neither can him. Because this guy, I mean, if you saw the snaps, it wasn't like they were a little bit off. They were, it was like Scud missiles shot off at a bad angle. I mean, firing all over the place, way over the punter, way to the side, way out. I mean, after one, it's like, okay, let's work on it. Let this gets right. After two, it's like, oh my God, what are we doing? After three, I don't know how you send the punt team back out there. The fourth one, the punter's like exhausted with this. He just goes and kicks the ball out of the end zone. Like, I can't keep doing this. My job sucks. Why are they doing this to me? So anyway, this is either two top 10 teams in FCS. It was them and Montana State. And the margin of defeat was 5 points. You gave up 8 points on snaps. So incredible creativity and a great way to find yourself onto the podcast. Way to go, Weber State.
That was so nice. That was just really heartwarming. Some poor FCS kid who can't long snap. It's very hard, Pat. It's a very hard job. It looks easy, not. Yeah, that was bad. I did see the highlights of that. All right, I'm going to say something nice. Well, I don't know what I'm saying something nice about. I'm going to say something nice about the apparent wife of a Miami Hurricane fan. Okay. The Canes are 3-4. Absolutely dreadful performance on Saturday. Gave up 21 straight at the end of the game to Duke. Lost 45-21. 8 turnovers.
That's unbelievable.
Not easy to do. Easy to do. The first year under Mario Cristobal has not gone well. I mean, two of those three victories are against like Bethane Cookman and somebody else. They lost one, you know, they lost to Middle Tennessee. They are getting the doors blown off by Duke. Now, there is a Twitter account named Message Board Geniuses at Board Geniuses. Very funny. This person scans the crazy message boards of each school and brings out the most lunatic ones just for us, just for the people who follow.
It's a great public service.
Really is. It's great. Yeah. So we have this guy and Kane's Insight. He wrote, I caused mayhem in the blue lot. I was walking to my car after the game and a Duke fan started running his mouth to me. Now, I don't know that this is a true story or not. And my radar is up because A, that meant a Duke, there is a Duke fan. And B, he went to the game.
And B, a mouthy Duke fan
who went to the game. But
I'm not buying
it. I'm not necessarily buying it, but we're not here. I'm not here to judge. I mean, you know, maybe it's true. I was walking to my car after the game, and a Duke fan started running his mouth to me. Big mistake, exclamation point. I'm not sure what exactly he thought he was going to accomplish because he was unconscious within 10 seconds of yapping to me. This guy just goes Kimbo Slice and just drops the dude, apparently. His family was in horror. You beat him up in front of his kids? Like, what? And there were a few Canes fans cheering me on as I drove away. Oh, of course. My wife refused to get in the car with me and took an Uber home instead.
Wow.
F this team, how was your Saturday? Well, I hope the wife is filing for divorce papers. You can't just knock out a Duke fan if they exist. But good for her just saying, nah, I'm not getting it. But then how the hell did you get an Uber to the stadium? Although not many people at that stadium. A lot of question marks here. But
this story is
where Mario Cristobal's program is right now. I received an unsolicited text after the game from noted Kane fan Nevin Shapiro. Nevin Shapiro wanted to provide a quote on his thoughts on this. You think I ran a crazy Ponzi scheme? What does that make Mario Cristobal guilty of against these Miami boosters? End quote. I tried to remind Nevin that it was just year one. Just give it some time. He didn't inherit, like, you know, he didn't take over the, you know, Alabama. There was not. So how was your Saturday going, Kane fans? Well, one guy's headed to divorce.
Divorce, and he's lucky he's not heading to court.
Well, he very well should. He also admitted it on this thing.
Yeah.
So they can find this. I hope this story is not true because the Duke fan and his poor kids. Granted,
yeah.
If there's a fan base not to antagonize in the parking lot after, Miami fans a little on the edge. It's a little edgy.
Yeah.
Probably not a great idea. Anyway, so I say something nice to the wife who hopefully is becoming single and becoming an FSU fan or something. I don't know.
Oh, gosh.
I don't think we ended on a positive note, but that's it. That's where we're at.
This is probably our meanest say something
Notice
nice
Ross
of the season.
Here. Ross would have been, he would have come on.
Yeah, right. Ross would say something real, actually legitimate.
Well, whatever.
Nice.
Ross will be back. We'll be back as well. Yeah. Preview next week. And thank you for subscribing, listening, sharing us on social media, telling your friends about us, and trying to find us subscribers. We will talk to you later.